5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The opposition Syrian Democratic Forces have launched an operation to recapture areas north of Raqqa, the Syrian de facto capital of Islamic State. A senior SDF commander told VOA his forces, including Kurdish YPG armored units, are advancing from three directions. Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov, during a visit to Uzbekistan, said Moscow is prepared to coordinate efforts with the Kurds and U.S.-led coalition to liberate Raqqa. But Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren rejected that idea. In Washington, U.S. spokesman Mark Toner spoke of ongoing U.S. support of the SDF.
We do continue to work and support the efforts of the Syrian Democratic Forces to retake territory from Daesh and further isolate its transportation, communications, supply routes into Raqqa in order to really choke off their hold on that city.
Toner said U.S. priorities are twofold: destroy the Islamic State and end the five-year conflict by putting in place a cessation of hostilities and jump-starting a political process leading to a transition. The U.S. envoy to the Great Lakes region of Africa told VOA Tuesday the first round of talks to end Burundi's political crisis was a positive step forward.
And I think a lot of credit goes to the facilitator, former President Nkapa, for being able to get the government to come to the table, some of the opposition to come to the table, and make a very public commitment to continue hearing from all of those who were not present. He's really set a tone of listening to all sides and has put the substance of the talks ahead of the pomp and circumstance of the talks.
U.S. Special Envoy to the Great Lakes region, Tom Perriello. The first round lasted 4 days in the northern Tanzanian city of Arusha. The talks aimed at ending protests and violence surrounding the controversial decision a year ago by President Pierre Nkurunziza to seek a third term. This is VOA News. Iraqi security forces are said to have completely encircled the western city of Fallujah on the second day of an offensive to retake it. It is held by Islamic State militants. Some 100,000 civilians are believed to be inside the city. Residents reported sporadic shelling of the city's center. Meanwhile, the mayor of the nearby town of Garma said Iraqi forces are clearing mines and booby traps after taking the town Monday. The Afghan Taliban has reportedly chosen a successor to his leader, Mullah Akhtar Mansour, who was killed in a U.S. drone strike Saturday in southwest Pakistan. The reports say Haibatullah Akhundzada is the new leader of the Taliban, while Sirajuddin Haqqani and Mullah Yaqub have been designated deputy leaders. Tuesday, Pakistan's interior minister said he couldn't confirm the certainty that Mansour had been killed. Chaudhary Nizar Ali Khan said without specific scientific verification, the Pakistani government and organizations have no means to confirm the news officially. But he said such testing of the badly charred body has been completed. An announcement could be coming soon. President Obama Monday announced the vehicle destroyed by a missile contained Mansour. The U.S. Defense Department said he was plotting specific imminent threats to U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan warned Tuesday that Ankara will scrap a landmark migrant readmission deal with the European Union unless the Europeans authorize visa-free travel for Turkish citizens. Speaking in Istanbul at the close of the UN humanitarian summit, Mr. Erdogan said talks on the issue will be pursued over the next weeks, but if agreement is not reached, it will not pass Turkey's parliament. Europeans agreed to supply nearly $7 billion in aid to Ankara to help the government process migrants forcibly returned to Turkey from Greece. Turkey linked the deal to visa-free travel, leading the UN and EU leaders to demand an array of Turkish human rights reforms. The Italian Coast Guard said some 3,000 migrants have been saved off the Libyan coast on Tuesday in nearly two dozen rescue operations. It said more than 5,600 have been rescued in the southern Mediterranean over the past 2 days. That raises the number brought to Italy this year to more than 34,000. Greek authorities removed some 2,000 people from makeshift camps at Idomeni on the Macedonian border. They're being taken to a newly built, more permanent structure further inside Greece. Police said they expect the operation to be complete within 10 days. Macedonia closed its frontier in March. The migrants stayed on in hopes that they might one day be allowed to continue their journey to Europe's interior. Nigeria's central bank Tuesday adopted a more flexible rate for the country's currency, the Naira, as a way to boost growth and stave off recession. The West African country faces a host of economic challenges, including a weakened currency, high unemployment, inflation, and negative growth. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's former prime minister and current opposition leader, Raila Odinga, says that the ruling party has no choice but to discuss the opposition's demand for changes to the Electoral Commission.
What we are seeing happening right now is the emergence of the strongmen on the continent. You see what happened in Burundi, you see what's happened in Uganda, you see what is about to happen in DRC.
Eritrea marked 25 years of independence with celebrations and fireworks in the capital, Asmara. In Tanzania's northern town of Arusha, the full-day talks to end the political crisis in Burundi ended today in what was described as a positive step.
So it was a good week in terms of being high on substance, high on listening. I think given the stakes in Burundi of how many lives are at stake, it was good to see a facilitator play that role so well.
That is the U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa, Thomas Perriello, speaking from Arusha, Tanzania. Kenya's former prime minister and current opposition leader, Raila Odinga, says that the ruling party has no choice but discuss the opposition's demands for changes to the Electoral Commission. Odinga visited VOA's Nairobi studios Tuesday, a day after demonstrations in Western Kenya left at least three people dead. VOA's Jill Craig has more.
In Nairobi Monday, police used tear gas and water cannons to prevent demonstrators from assembling for a protest against the Electoral Commission, known as the IEBC. Demonstrations went ahead in several other cities, but three people died under unclear circumstances in and around the western city of Kisumu. Odinga says there's a better way to deal with the situation.
And if the police allow these demonstrations, they will be really very peaceful. And they would just agree with us. You start from point A to point B at this time. And people will do those demonstrations the way they do it in London, the way they do it in New York, the way they do it in Tokyo and so on.
Odinga's CORD coalition has been organizing the protests to demand changes in the Electoral Commission, which opposition parties say favors the ruling Jubilee coalition. Odinga says his coalition wants a level playing field before presidential and parliamentary elections scheduled for August of next year. To do so, he says he and his supporters want the current nine full-time electoral commissioners to step down and be replaced with five new ones that act more like an executive board. They also want the multiple voter registers to be supplanted by a single accurate one and for the electronic voting process to be smoothed out before Election Day. And Odinga says the current government, and by extension the ruling Jubilee coalition, must sit down for constructive dialogue.
They have no choice. They will have to agree to sit down and negotiate. So we will continue for as long as it takes. We will not surrender. That is not an option.
If the playing field is leveled, Odinga says, then the politicians, including himself, should accept the results of the elections, whatever they may be.
Why is it so difficult here in Africa? It can be done. What we are seeing happening right now is the emergence of the strongmen on the continent. You see what happened in Burundi. You see what's happened in Uganda. You see what is about to happen in DRC. You've seen it is happening around the whole of the region and the continent. And we're saying that this is not right for democracy. Africans should not be judged by different standards from the rest of the world. Africa needs to be recognized as part and parcel of the international community.
Odinga says that his coalition's protests will continue every Monday until their demands are met. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa, Thomas Perriello, described the just-concluded full-day talks on Burundi as a positive step. The talks held in Tanzania's town of Arusha are part of efforts to end the political crisis in Burundi. They were facilitated by former Tanzania President Benjamin Mkapa. VOA's Central Africa reporter Eddie Rema spoke to Mr. Perriello in Arusha.
It was a good week in terms of being high on substance, high on listening. I think given the stakes in Burundi of how many lives are at stake, it was good to see a facilitator play that role so well.
Special Envoy Pereira, there has been criticism over the selection of individuals and organizations to participate in the dialogue in Arusha, Tanzania. The most loud of those is the absence of SINARED in Arusha. What's your take on that?
Well, one of the ways I think you judge a process like this is not by whether everything goes perfectly, but how the facilitator and the team react. And there were legitimate concerns raised about some of the inclusivity questions, and the facilitator moved quickly. Mr. Mkapa, with his communique over the weekend and his closing remarks today, that he has no interest in letting a peace process this important get stuck on some of these questions. So he simply made himself available to meet with all decisive stakeholders, including those who were invited. He's already met with some who were not invited. So that's what he's emphasizing, hearing from all sides to come up with a plan that could work. It's going to be on the decisions of leaders from both sides about whether they're genuinely willing to put the interests of their country ahead of any other particular interest they may have. I think the facilitator is creating the space for a genuinely inclusive dialogue, which is not to say there have not been missteps along the way, but this is a process that's focused on how to solve those problems. So he's going to listen to everyone. I think he's got strong support directly from the heads of state of the East African community who have a central role to play in this as well, and also, frankly, stand to absorb some of the costs if this goes in the direction many fear of looking more like a civil war. So there's still time to get on a path to peace. This dialogue is the key to getting on that path. And I think this week was overall an indication for some hope that that could work.
What has been the U.S. role in this entire process, Envoy Pereira?
Well, the United States has long been a partner of the people of Burundi and its government, and we are eager to be supportive of this peace process. We continue to support humanitarian efforts both inside and outside of the country. And we have been willing to impose consequences, including targeted sanctions against those who have undermined peace and democracy, both on the government side and the opposition side. So we will continue to stand strong, both as a positive partner and as someone willing to impose consequences when the stakes are this high for the millions of people in Burundi and those who've had to flee.
You're optimistic after what you witnessed in Arusha?
For hopeful over optimistic, I think it was a positive step. And the part of the process like this is not that you know exactly how it will play out at the beginning, but that by getting people together to talk, to start to rebuild relationships of trust and lines of communication, that you hope solutions will emerge. But I think we all go into it with a stark understanding of what has happened in the past in Burundi when sides have clashed and hundreds of thousands of lives that have been lost. So we go in, unfortunately, aware both of how badly this could go, but also with hope that Burundi has done this before. They've been through a peace process. We're not starting from scratch. This should be building on the foundations of the Arusha Accords that succeeded in building a post-reconciliation space in Burundi, and that's, I think, what the region hopes for, the East African community that has asked President Mkapa to take on this role, and I think it's what all of us as international partners hope for the people of this amazing but unfortunately currently fragile country.
That was the U.S. Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region of Africa, Thomas Perriello. He was speaking to VOA's Eddie Rema from Arusha, Tanzania. Eritrea is celebrating 25 years since it became independent from Ethiopia. In the capital, Asmara, there were parades and fireworks attended by hundreds of people from all over the country. However, numerous reports from human rights organizations continue to be critical of the Eritrean government for its human rights abuses and the lack of freedom of speech in the country. Awet Waldemichael is an Eritrean scholar and history professor at the Queen's University in Ontario. He tells me that even though there's a lot to celebrate in terms of achieving territorial independence, the government in Asmara needs to do more to address its human rights record.
On the one hand, I celebrate the independence. I celebrate the accomplishment that was made possible by the sacrifices of so many brave souls, by the courage and struggle of our people. On the other hand, that independence is at best incomplete, at best is a work in progress, because the struggle was not waged for territorial liberation, but also the liberation of our people from so many ills, be it socioeconomic or political or otherwise. Unfortunately, we are lagging behind in other aspects, in freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of movement. Our accomplishment has been less than satisfactory, to put it lightly. In that sense, it's a still work in progress. So it's a day of celebration, but at the same time, it's a day of reflection on why, how it is that we are where we are, and why is it that we have not forged further forward than we have.
Okay. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of criticism towards the government of Eritrea. What would you say have been some of the achievements the country has made, or some of the strides that have been made in the country in the last 25 years?
Some of the strides that have been accomplished is the retention of the independence and sovereignty of the country is a huge accomplishment that I personally do not believe would have been possible without the current generation of leaders and the sacrifices of our people. Other major accomplishments include infrastructural development, be it massive and ambitious road infrastructure or the distribution and availability of water resources, especially the damming practices, the expansion of the education system or democratization of the education system, and expansion of health services are some of the major accomplishments that, regardless what one thinks of this government, cannot take away from it. But at the same time, a lot of the criticisms leveled against the government are not without merit.
Okay, and what are some of the notable criticisms, and what can the government do to be able to complete the independence, as you say?
Well, some of these criticisms involve the abysmal human rights record. By unconditional release of all religious or faith-based or political prisoners, the complete end of national service past 18 months, and demobilization, gradual and responsible demobilization of all of Eritrea's manpower from the military back into civilian life with adequate support. The attention to veterans, including the sustainability of their livelihood and their children, of all veterans of war, be it the independence war or the post-independence wars that Eritrea was involved in. These are some of the major things that the government and we as a people have to do in order to make independence complete. But one important thing that I must mention here is when I am pointing a finger at the government, I am also pointing several fingers at myself as part of the Eritrean people. And so our failures, although the government as an executive bears responsibility for them and takes credit for the accomplishments, the accomplishments as well as the failures are also attributable to us as the people.
Awet Woldemichael is an Eritrean scholar and history professor at the Queen's University in Ontario, Canada. A prominent Ethiopian political opposition member is in prison facing possible death penalty if convicted over his Facebook posts. Yonathan Tesfai, a former spokesman of the opposition Semayawi Blue Party, was first detained in December 2015, but has been held in detention since then while he awaits trial. Amnesty International condemned the use of laws designed to prosecute terrorism to silence opposition members and others in the civil society. Muthoni Wanyeki is Amnesty International's regional director for East Africa, the Horn of Africa, and the Great Lakes. She tells VOA's Horn of Africa reporter Salem Solomon that arbitrary arrests and long pretrial detention aren't good for the country.
Our fundamental concern beyond his individual case and sort of, like I said, the arbitrary arrest, the very lengthy pretrial detention without charge, and basically was charged with incitement, planning, preparation, conspiracy, and attempt to commit a terrorist act. And reading this sort of in light of other information that we have, including a whole bunch of court documents and judgments on people who have been charged under the Counterterrorism Act. We consider this case to be another example of overreach. Obviously, Ethiopia, like us here in Kenya, have concerns about security, but to extend that to really silence legitimate dissent is not good.
Any message that an organization like the Amnesty International want to send to all governments in Ethiopia or other countries that are picking up on these laws to stifle dissent?
Well, our message to the Ethiopian government is no different than our message to the Kenyan government, or no different than the message to the American government or the British government. Yes, obviously states have a right and a duty to keep their citizens secure and to deal with terrorism as a form of organized crime that it is. But their pursuit of counterterrorism must be completely in line with human rights norms, standards, not just internationally, not just regionally, but also within countries' own constitutions. That's all that we're calling on the Ethiopian government to do, is respect its own Bill of Rights, respect regional standards, respect, you know, basically rule of law, and not use counterterrorism legislation as a means to quash legitimate dissent. Now, in this case, it's dissent by a prominent member of a political opposition party, but we hold that normal people, ordinary citizens, bloggers, journalists, etc., also equally have the right to express dissent. We all do, as long as we do it peacefully.
And in order to discredit his political stance, the government of Ethiopia was mentioning that he had links with the Oromo Liberation Front, which is a separatist movement that's based in Eritrea, a neighboring country. Do you have any thoughts about how such a broad brush on any opposition member to label them terrorists is used?
Well, I mean, I think it's clear from the statement that we put out that we ourselves, looking at the issues, found no demonstrable links to the OLF. Now, if the state has evidence counter to our own assessment of the situation, presumably they'll be bringing it forth in court. But obviously we didn't find that, which is why we're calling for immediate and unconditional release and an end to this. I think we've previously documented quite extensively how this OLF kind of elephant in the room is being used across the Oromia region in appalling ways to quash dissent and to basically manage people of that particular region, resulting in, you know, similar things, lengthy periods of detention without charge, in ungazetted places of detention, credible reports of torture.
Muthoni Wanyeki is Amnesty International's Regional Director for East Africa, the Horn of Africa, and the Great Lakes. She was speaking to VOA's Horn of Africa reporter Salim Solomon. Civil rights campaigners in Malawi say that stronger laws are needed to protect albinos from violent attacks. Activists held a march in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. VOA's Lamek Masina reports that the United Nations warned last month that albinos in Malawi are at a risk of total extinction amid a spike in killings and attacks for their body parts.
The United Nations warned last month that albinos in Malawi are at risk of total extinction amid a spike in killings and attacks for their body parts. Several hundred people participated in a march to Parliament in Lilongwe. One of their placards read, "Wake up, parliamentarians." Edward Chileka Banda is organizing chairperson for the march.
The presentation of the petition to Parliament marks our determination as citizens and civil society organizations to call for immediate stop and end to the killings of people with albinism.
The petition calls for life imprisonment for people who attack albinos. Parliament member Esther Jairos Cholobala received the petition on behalf of the Speaker of Parliament. She said lawmakers will take swift action.
You know, it's disturbing a lot when you see that perpetrators are being, you know, sent back either due to bail or maybe lenient judicial sentences. It increases the fear our people living with albinism is having here in Malawi.
17 albinos have been killed in Malawi in the past 2 years. Few perpetrators are caught. The president of Association of People with Albinism in Malawi, Boniface Massa, said for a long time Malawi has been paying lip service on addressing the attacks.
The stage is that the law has to go. It has to be speeded up, and they must have resources channeled to address that process.
People with albinism and absence of pigment in their skin, hair and eyes are targeted in Malawi and other parts of Africa because of a false belief potions made from their body parts will bring good luck and wealth. Malawi has dedicated this week to raising awareness on the issue. The country's top football league kicked off its Game Over campaign. The league invited albino individuals to a special match and posted banners around the stadium denouncing attacks. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here's Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Jackson. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. The Democratic Republic of Congo's AS Vita is disqualified from the Orange African Champions League, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, revealed in Cairo, Egypt on Tuesday. According to CAF, AS Vita fielded a player who had not completed his four-match suspension. Consequently, AS Vita is replaced by South Africa's Mamelodi Sundowns, the team the Congolese club beat to qualify for the Orange African Champions League mini-league phase. Staying in Cairo, Zambia's Zesco United will host Egypt's El Ahli, as Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosa are at home to Morocco's Wydad Athletics Club in Group A action at the start of the mini-league phase in the Orange Africa Champions League. According to the draws held in Cairo on Tuesday, Algeria's Entente Setif engage South African visitors Mamelodi Sundowns, and Nigeria's Enyimba welcome Egypt's Zamalek. The contest gets underway on the 17th of June. Meanwhile, Algeria's Mouloudia Olympic Bejaia are set to host Tanzania's Young Africans as the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe welcome Ghana's Medeama in Group A action in the mini-league phase of the Orange Africa Confederations Cup. According to the draws conducted in Cairo, Morocco's Kaukab Marrakech are at home to Tunisian defending champions Etoile du Sahel as FUS Rabat tackle visiting Libyan's El Ahli Tripoli in Group B action. The contest starts on the 17th of June. Turning to athletics, Nigerian sprinters Egweru Ogo Ogene, Divine Oduduru, and Patience Okon each achieved Olympic qualifying times at the 2nd Athletics Federation of Nigeria Golden League meeting in Sapele, Delta State, South Nigeria over the weekend. Competing in their hometown, Ogo Ogene won his 100-meter heat in 10.15 seconds as Oduduru triumphed in the 200-meter finals in 20.47 seconds. Okon prevailed in women's 400-meter in exactly 52 seconds. Meanwhile, Henry Okori prevailed in 400-meter hurdles in 51.45 seconds. In the women's 400-meter hurdles, Daisy Akpofu clocked 57.77 seconds to Rita Osei's 58.08 seconds. On the infield, Mary Otuaroa won the women's triple jump with a leap of 13.18 meters. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark, and have a good day. And that's it for this May 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending the morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, sports editor Mark Owuma, I'm Jackson Vunganyi, in for James Bati in Washington, wishing you all a very good day.
Hi, I'm Susan Yawkey of VOA's International Edition. VOA's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of some of the world's greatest experts on international issues. But you don't have to tune in at broadcast time. Listen when you want. Just go to voanews.com. Click the Programs tab and scroll down to International Edition.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA.